The Life of General Belisarius. The End of General Belisarius. Nearly 4 years after the Battle of Chitos, AD 563, a conspiracy was formed by Marcellus, Sergius, and some other illustrious senators for the murder of Justinian. It is no small proof of how much the natural faults of Justinian were aggravated by old age, and how intolerable his government had grown, that the disaffected should not have patiently expected the death of an octogenarian. The conspirators were detected, torture was used to wring from them the names of their accomplices, and some domestics of Belisarius ventured to accuse their master. Since the Bulgarian victory, the hero had remained under the displeasure of Justinian, but it required the very extremity of jealous dotage to believe that he, who in full vigor of manhood had refused a crown, and preserved his loyalty amidst the strongest temptations to rebellion, should now, at the close of his life, assume the part of an assassin. Such considerations were overlooked by his monarch and suppressed by his enemies. In the month of December, Belisarius was ignominiously deprived of his guards and domestics, his fortunes were taken, and he was detained a closed prisoner in his palace. The trial of the true and supposed conspirators took place in the ensuing year, AD 564, when a sentence of death was probably pronounced on all and executed on the greater number. The past services of Belisarius, which might have proved his innocence, served at least to mitigate his fate, and accordingly to a frequent practice of the Byzantine court was the eminent state prisoners. The decree of death was relaxed into one of blindness, and his eyes were accordingly put out. It was then that, restored to liberty but deprived of all means of sustenance by preceding confiscation of his property, Belisarius was reduced to beg his bread before the gates of the convent of Laurus. A platter of wood or earthenware which he held out for charity, and his exclamation, "Give a penny to Belisarius, the general," remained for many years impressed on the recollections of the people. It would seem that this spectacle of persecuted merit aroused some dangerous feelings of indignation and pity, and was therefore speedily removed from public view. Belisarius was brought back, most probably as a prisoner, to his former palace. A portion of his treasures was allotted for his use, and these circumstances might have given some color for the assertion of 2 or 3 centuries afterwards of his having been restored to honors and to freedom. His death, which perhaps was hastened by the grief of the hardship of captivity, ensued in the course of the next spring, AD 565, and Antonio, his wife, who survived him, devoted to the cloister the remains of her life and fortune, since in all likelihood is the authentic narrative of the fall of Belisarius. In person, Belisarius was tall and commanding, and presented a remarkable contrast to the dwarfish, ungainly aspect of his rival, Narses. His features were regular and noble, and his appearance in the streets of Constantinople after the Vandal and Gothic victories never failed to attract the admiration of the people. As a military leader, he was enterprising, firm, and fearless. His conception was clear, his judgment rapid and decisive. His conquests were achieved with smaller means than any other of like extent recorded in history. He frequently experienced reverses in the field, but in no case did he fail without some strong or sufficient reason for his failure, such as the mutiny of his soldiers, the overwhelming numbers of his antagonists, or his total want for necessary supplies. And it may be observed of him, as of Arminius, though that sometimes beaten in battle, he never was overcome in war. His superior tactics covered his defects, retrieving his losses, and prevented his enemies from reaping the fruits of victory. And it is particularly mentioned that even in the most desperate emergencies, he never lost his courage or presence of mind. Among the circumstances which contributed most strongly to his success, the kindness which his adversaries met with at his hands, and strict discipline which he maintained amongst his soldiers. This moderation of Belisarius appears the more entitled to praise for the fierceness and disorder usual at his age. It was the first care in every victory to extend mercy and protection to the vanquished, and to shield their persons, and if possible, their property from injury. During a march, the trampling of the cornfields by cavalry was carefully avoided, and the troops, as Procopius tells us, seldom ventured to gather an apple from the trees while ready payment to the villagers for any provisions they brought. made them bless the name of Belisarius and secure to the Roman, the Byzantine camp a constant and cheerful supply. To the soldiers who transgressed these rules, the general was stern and unforgiving. No rank could defy, no obscurity elude his justice, and because he punished severely, he had to punish seldom. He knew how to despise those shallow disclaimers who cry out against any rigor in the law because they can more easily compute the penalties it inflicts than the crimes it has prevented. But while the licentiousness and turbulence were repressed by the strong arm of Belisarius, his liberality cheered and animated the deserving. The gift of a golden bracelet or a collar rewarded any achievement in battle. Loss of a horse or a weapon was immediately supplied from his private funds, and the wounded found in him a father and a friend. To all he was open and easy of access, and by his courteous demeanor often comforted where he could not relieve. From his generosity, says Procopius, you would have deemed him very rich, by his manners very poor. His private virtues promoted and confirmed the discipline of his soldiers. None in all of his campaigns ever saw him flushed with wine, and the charms of the fairest captives from the Goths or the Vandals could not overcome his conjugal fidelity. But the striking and particular feature in the characteristic of Belisarius and the character of Belisarius, as distinguished from other illustrious generals, was his enduring and unconquerable loyalty. He was doubtless bound to Justinian by many ties of gratitude, and the suspicions entertained him of in Africa may have been considered to be fully counterbalanced by the triumph and other honors which attended his return. But from the siege of Ravenna till his final departure from Italy, he was, almost without intermission, exposed to the most galling and unworthy treatment. He was insulted, degraded, and despised, and was even attacked in his fame when restored to an important station, without any means for discharging its duties and sustaining his former reputation. It would be difficult to produce another instance of such signal and repeated ingratitude, unless in republics where, from the very nature of the government, no crime is so dangerous or so severely punished as serving the state too well. When we consider the frequency and therefore the ease of revolutions in this age, the want of hereditary right in an imperial family, strong attachment of the soldiers to the victorious general, while the person of Justinian was hated even by his own domestic guards, it will, I think, be admitted that a rebellion by Belisarius would probably have proved successful and secure. And the same conclusion is likewise apparent from the offer of proclaiming him emperor of the West at Ravenna. Yet no one occasion when he roused into the slightest mark of disobedience or resentment. He bore every injury with unchanged submission. He resisted the feelings of indignation, of revenge, of self-interest, and even of the thirst for glory, which, according to Tacitus, is of all frailties the longest restrained by the wise. So that has been the life of General Belisarius, an incredible general, and so badly treated by Justinian, it's just terrible. The new topic after the life of Belisarius will be the kings of Macedonia up to Alexander the Great. So we're going to start at the beginning of Macedonia and go through the death of Philip. The sources for this include the Wars of Justinian by Procopius, Short History of Byzantium by Norwich, Byzantine Art of War by Decker, Byzantine Armies 324 to 1453 by Turnbull, and The Life of Belisarius by Mahone. So I hope you enjoyed that. And as always, don't forget to come by the website, summahistorica.com or historyaccordingtobob.com, and ask a question, leave a comment, check out our merchandise, and if you like what we're doing, please feel free to support us. Thank you very much.